Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hello, I'm Tom Washbourne from AHDB Dairy, and in this episode of the Food and Farming Podcast, we're going to be talking about carbon footprinting. Let's face it, more consumers are talking about farming's environmental impact, and this is one such area we could better understand. But before we try to make any reductions, it's essential to carry out a carbon audit to identify a starting point, a baseline. I recently went to Bridge Farm in Glastonbury to catch up with dairy farmer David Cotton and Liz Bowles, who's the chief executive of the Farm Carbon Toolkit. I began by asking David about his farm.
We farm here 280 milking cows on an autumn block calving system, and we've been a strategic dairy farm for the last 4 years.
Thank you very much. Liz.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. My name is Liz Bowles. I'm the chief exec of the Farm Carbon Toolkit. We're an organisation that was set up by farmers a decade ago, and we exist to help farmers to understand their farm carbon footprint and also to help them identify how best to reduce emissions and store carbon into soils and into trees and hedges.
Thank you. And I believe you're both involved with the Dairy Roadmap. Now, a lot of people will have heard of the Dairy Roadmap, but not 100% certain myself in terms of what the Dairy Roadmap actually does. Could you outline that for me, David?
Sure. I mean, the Dairy Roadmap's been around probably about 20 years now, I should think. And it's always been about environmental issues. It started off, a lot of the early stuff was on making sure that recycled plastic was used in milk bottles and saving water in processing plants, things like that. But, so that was the start of it. But it involves the NFU, AHDB, Dairy UK. They're all around the table at the same time to really work on environmental issues within the dairy industry right across the sector. And the main topic at the moment, as you can well imagine, is climate change and carbon footprint and all the things that go with that. So we're doing a lot of work at the moment with I'm part of the Dairy Roadmap Carbon Footprint Working Group, which sounds like a big mouthful, but it's really about getting some standardisation in the reporting on carbon footprints on dairy farms. Because I think it gets complicated, things like scope 3, scope 1, scope 2. But as far as the processes are concerned, most of the carbon footprint is actually coming from the dairy farms when they look at their total carbon footprint within the industry. So therefore, dairy farms have a big part to do with the Dairy Roadmap and that side of it.
Thank you very much. Liz, what's your role in Dairy Roadmap?
Okay, so I'm assuming that Dairy UK and the Dairy Roadmap people actually invited all the calculators who are involved with dairy farming to join the group. And we join basically because it's so important that dairy farmers feel confident in using a calculator. So we're really keen that we can come together and standardise where we can to make it much more easy for dairy farmers to actually understand when they're inputting the data, what they're getting. And I think a lot of this, and David's just mentioned it, is really down to the scoping and the boundaries that are set by the different calculators. And by boundaries, I mean what's being measured. So for instance, some calculators only measure emissions. So they'll only measure the actual greenhouse gas emissions or estimate the greenhouse gas emissions of a given farm, whereas others will estimate the contribution towards carbon sequestration from hedges and soils. And that sometimes just that difference is enough to make farmers sort of feel less confident in the result. And I suspect some of that is also down to how well we explain what we're doing. And that's something I think we're all getting better at as this whole science of carbon footprinting matures.
And the key is the quality of the data too, because yeah, if you put rubbish in, you get rubbish out. But everyone wants a good baseline figure, because if we can't show improvements without a reliable baseline figure. So some of that is getting the data right at the beginning so that we can all understand over time and we can show improvements. And it doesn't happen year on year. You've got to look at 5-year averages rather than 1 year out of five, because your carbon footprint goes up year on year, up or down year on year, depending on the weather and other circumstances in that year. So it's looking at the longer term trends. But to do that, you've got to trust the data.
With a view on longer term trends, how's your thoughts on carbon footprinting changed over the last few years?
Well, it's interesting because when I started out Strategic Dairy Farm, it didn't really, well, it wasn't on the agenda. And I mean, yes, I used to have a visit from my dairy processor to measure my carbon footprint. And I was given a piece of paper which told me what the numbers were. And I just really went, so what?
What do you do with the piece of paper?
Well, the piece of paper is in the file because you have to keep it year on year. So I can tell you what my kilos of carbon per, was it?
Fat
and protein corrected milk. I can give you a figure. And I've now got a lower figure than I had 5 years ago. But at the time, 5 years ago, I wasn't really conscious of changes I had to make. And I think that's what's changed, is the fact that I'm more conscious and aware of it. So now I can look at some of the things I do and have done with a carbon ticket added to it.
And it sounds like your attitude towards carbon footprinting has changed somewhat along that journey. Has there been a moment which has been like a light bulb for you and has changed your attitude towards carbon footprinting?
I wouldn't necessarily have been a light bulb moment, no, and I probably wouldn't be a light bulb moment on a lot of farms. But what I suppose the light bulb moment is the realisation that actually the more efficient you are as a business and if you look at things from an efficiency point of view and a business point of view, you will generally have a lower carbon footprint. So if you do a better job at rearing your heifers so they calve as 2-year-olds, you have a lower turnover of stock in you know, your percentage of culling rate is kept at a sensible level, so maybe 20-22%, something like that, then you will have a lower carbon footprint than if you were calving as a 3-year-old or you were culling out nearly 30% of your herd.
And these are the business efficiencies that we've been talking about for years.
Absolutely. But you now just put a carbon measure on them as well. And I think that's probably the change. And it's a, as you say, we've been talking about it for years. And it's actually a way really now of demonstrating the benefits of making those efficiencies.
Liz, would you say that you can relate your carbon footprint directly to your profitability?
In many instances, yes, because David's absolutely right. Very often it makes absolute business sense to look at ways of reducing the carbon footprint on your farm. There may be some times when you almost sort of need to do a bit of a toss-up. Is it better to do this or that? But very often things like reducing the usage of electricity is always going to improve your profitability, as well as reducing your footprint, reducing your reliance on artificial fertilisers, so long as you're still producing as much forage, and we'll talk about that a bit later, will definitely improve your profitability. Reducing your usage of concentrates will definitely improve profitability. So, and as David said, the really critical thing actually, which sometimes gets forgotten when people are doing carbon footprinting, is the vital importance of animal health, because having reduced mortality, reduced culling rate, have a significant impact on your footprint. And, you know, so breeding animals and managing animals to reduce mortality and keep to a moderate replacement rate will have a direct influence on your carbon footprint as well as to your bottom line positively.
As someone said to me yesterday, if the animal leaves the farm with its feet in the air, yeah, it's not good news. But if it leaves its farm with the feet on the ground, whether to sell on to somebody else or to go into the food chain, then it's a lower carbon footprint.
So have there been any particular big wins for you, David?
Yes, I think there have. I mean, there are some things I did really out of consciousness on thinking, well, what can I do? Some of it is solar panels on roofs, which, yeah, that you know, I could go mad with solar panels, but I've done it within my budgets. I suppose the main big win has been fertiliser usage and better use of manure. And so I'm using probably 28 tonnes at least less fertiliser than I was. And we're at nearly 600-acre farm. So, you know, if we're only using nearly about 56 tons of fertilizer a year now, nitrogen fertilizer. So better use of slurry, better use of better management of grassland, all those things together means we can use less fertilizer. And I think that is probably be my biggest win. If you're looking at other wins, it would be on improving the PLI on my calves born on the farm. So the breeding efficiency on those calves. Now I'm getting all those factors that you look at when you're looking to get your best calves to bring on for the next generation. We're now getting significant improvement in efficiency of those animals that come into the dairy herd. So those would be two big wins I think we'd have.
And it'd be interesting actually to look at that over time, to look at the impact of that reduction in fertiliser use, because as you said, it's not just the reduction in fertiliser usage, it's also because you're making better use of your manures and slurries. And through making better use of them, it's actually a double win, because the emissions from the slurry manures is lower through using things like dribble bars. So you're not losing it as methane or nitrous oxide into the atmosphere, which are greenhouse gases, but you're actually getting that fertility into the soil, which is brilliant, and it reduces your requirement for fertiliser. So it really is a win-win. And I would imagine you're right, that's the biggest source of reduction in emissions. Alongside, it'll be fertiliser first, I think, given what you said, because you've reduced your usage by about 30% over that period of time, which is significant. Your electricity, by not relying on importing electricity, will be quite significant too, but probably fertiliser will be the biggest one. And because methane and nitrous oxide are such potent greenhouse gases, that will have, you know, that will be the dominant impact on your footprint over the last 5 years, or rather a reduction in it.
Yeah, I think the other one, of course, is that we now basically use rape meal and caustic treated wheat for feeding the cows. So there's no soya in the diet, or no significant soya. If there is any soya, it would only be in the calf rearing diet, if anything, but it'll only be in the cake. But I could specify specifically not to have any soya in that as well if I choose to. So it's very minimal in the whole scheme of things that what we are using there. So I think certainly going to a diet that doesn't include soya makes a big difference too.
It does, and certainly for other farmers who are listening to this call who perhaps don't know what's in their concentrate feed, thinking about talking to your manufacturer about actually having a compound that hasn't got soya in it will reduce your footprint quite considerably, depending on the amount of soya you're currently feeding. So it's definitely something worth looking at. And for ruminants, there's not really nutritionally a requirement to have soya in the diet. It's convenient because it's high quality protein, relatively cheap to put into diets. But in terms of its necessity, it's almost like a luxury ingredient as far as dairy cow feed is concerned.
And actually, in a year like this, where the price of soya is so high, then it's probably a good reason to not have soya in the diet as well.
Yeah.
Because, of course, the price comes into it on a lot of these things as well. But, you know, I mean, whenever you're trying to modernise your business all the time, and we've put in things like a glycol cooler now for chilling the milk. We've got vari-speed vacuum pumps, but are we tinkering at the edges with that sort of thing? You know, it's a bit like changing the light bulbs for LED light bulbs. They don't actually use any less electricity than a fluorescent light bulb. So it's a balance on that as to what the real gain is. I mean, I'm not even sure whether the lifetime of an LED light bulb is going to be as good, but that's when I always get in a bit of a tangle between life cycle analysis and all that sort of thing, as to what the real benefits are. Because if you're throwing something out that was working to put something else in that's been manufactured, you've still got a carbon burn there, if you like. So that's always a balance you've got to look at. I mean, yes, put it in your budget. If you're going to do something to make a change with consideration to your carbon footprint as well as to what you're going to put in. But don't do it just to tick the box to say I've improved my carbon footprint, because actually, you know, as I say, the whole life cycle analysis comes into it as well.
And so, that's an interesting point, actually, because again, when you're looking at different calculators, that's an area where they do it differently. And looking at the embedded carbon when, for instance, you're investing in infrastructure like concrete or metal is, you know, if you can manage without it, you'll be responsible for less emissions. And actually, that's probably the right way to look at it. It's exactly the same logic as you used to apply when you're thinking about replacing your car, you know, which is going to be better. And in terms of footprint, the longer you can make a tractor last, the better, because that the embedded carbon in manufacturing that tractor will be paid back over more years.
Mm.
But then you also have to balance that against buying a new vehicle, which has got much lower fuel usage. And that's the point at which you almost need some kind of what if. In fact, we've got one in our calculator, so you can do that, is actually look at that what if. If I do that, what's the impact going to be on my footprint? And it will start to become more important as we make calculators more accurate and we properly take account of all of these things, because they are important. You know, you think about the amount of infrastructure that is on some farms, and that will have a huge carbon debt to pay back.
You mentioned there about your calculator, and I understand there are several calculators out there.
Yeah.
Do you think that in itself is a barrier for uptake when it comes to carbon footprinting?
Actually, I think it sometimes is used as a reason, but certainly what we say is use a calculator and stick with it, because and David's quite right. You do need to work as hard as you can to get the best data in on your baseline, because that will give you the most accurate picture you can get. But then, the advice from all the calculators is to stay using the calculator that you started with, because then you can compare your performance year on year with your baseline. And the great thing with many of the calculators, or certainly with ours, is once you put your data in for year one, when you come back in year two, you can simply look at what you put in and just change things that need changing. Or if they're still the same, you don't change them. So it becomes an easier exercise in year two. But I do recognise that it feels quite daunting the first time you do it, especially if you've got quite a complicated farm, because there's lots of information that's needed. So to sit down and do it, you don't really need distractions while you're doing it. So for a farmer to find that space to be able to sit down and just get on with it, because they're all online, so you kind of need to have the space and the bandwidth on your computer and Wi-Fi that it will allow you to do it. But actually, I think the nice thing, I think, certainly with the farm carbon calculator ours, is that you build up a picture as you go of your farm, so you're starting to see what your footprint's looking like in terms of fertilizers, in terms of fuels, in terms of livestock. And you can immediately start to see where your hotspots are, which I think is kind of gives you the encouragement to keep going, because you want to see ultimately where your hotspots are. At least, you know, I certainly did. I'm a farmer as well. And for me, it was, you know, quite a voyage of discovery to find out. I thought I knew. It wasn't quite what I thought it was, but by the time I got to the end of doing my footprint. So that made it actually very interesting to understand where my hotspots were.
I think the other challenge, of course, is that, and a frustration for some farmers, is whether it's a whole farm carbon measurement or it's an enterprise carbon measurement. And that's the difficulty, because, of course, for most dairy farmers, they're asked to do their enterprise dairy carbon footprint. But we're all whole farmers. How many people are pure dairy farmers? A lot of people aren't. They've got some beef, they've got some arable. So then it's a case of, okay, so how much of this is just going to be, well, I'm doing my measurement of my dairy carbon footprint, or am I doing the whole farm? Because for me, the frustration is that I farm 600 acres. How much of it is being used just for the dairy enterprise? And that's the balance you also have to take in. So I think that's one of the things that we're actually trying to sort of clarify as well within the dairy roadmap, is that, you know, we all farm whole farms. Mm. So then you have to look at things like, you know, what trees you've got, what hedgerows you've got. We're not going to go on to sequestration at the moment, because that makes it even more complicated, but it's an area that is one of the frustrations, is that is it an enterprise carbon footprint or a whole farm carbon footprint?
And I think that's a really relevant point, because increasingly all the businesses that buy foodstuffs from farmers, i.e. dairy processors or abattoirs, increasingly what they want to know is the emissions associated with what they're buying. So they want to know how many kilograms of carbon dioxide equivalent per litre your milk is, for instance, David. And if ABP or whoever were buying beef from you, they would want the same per kilogram of beef. Well, at least they will.
Mm.
They will one day.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the moment, they're just asking if you're doing a carbon footprint.
But well, they've now set up their own programme, I think.
Oh, they're doing something.
They're doing something. Yeah. But yes, it is one of those things where they all want their 5 pennies worth. So, and we sit here as farmers saying, oh, not another one.
But then, as you rightly say, you farm a farm. and trying to make that artificial distribution of your emissions between your enterprises is just that, it's artificial. Yeah. And probably in the fullness of time, we'll find some sensible way of allocating between enterprises and allow you to do a whole farm carbon footprint so you can properly really understand what's going on in your farm. I mean, at Farm Carbon Toolkit we do, and we also do offer farmers the ability to estimate their carbon storage, but at the same time we also have to offer the kilograms of emissions per litre of milk, because that's what the milk processors want. And they're being asked to do it by their customers, the retailers.
Yes.
Because the retailers have signed up to a commitment to get to net zero, and they need to be able to deliver that. And part of that is understanding their Scope 3 emissions, which are the emissions from farm.
Is net zero achievable?
That's a very good question. If you are a farmer, given the biological nature of farming, the only way to get to net zero is actually to look at your own insetting on farm alongside your farming activity.
What do you mean by insetting?
Storing carbon into soils or into trees and hedges. So basically, and most farmers will be doing that. They don't all measure it. And that, and David, you know, you're interested in hedges, and actually hedges are a phenomenal source of carbon storage, especially if they're left to grow a bit taller. And, you know, potentially that will be a way for farm businesses to get to net zero, is actually to look at the contribution of carbon storage in their hedges, trees and soil.
Unless, of course, you live in areas with dry stone walls.
you do have a problem then.
Yeah. So dry stone walling in all that area could be a problem on that front. But it is that sort of thing, which I think, you know, and if we're looking at what do we do next in the way of improving our carbon footprint, it is that sort of thing, isn't it, really? Is what more can I do on the farm? Will I get to net zero? I'm not convinced I'll get to net zero. It's... We'll see what the ways of measuring are. And this is the balance, of course, between food production, environmental production and all those things. So, I mean, I look at it that I will be doing all I can to keep my carbon footprint as low as I can without ruining my business. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I run a business and I have to keep running my business. And that's the challenge for me, is the balance between that. And it's like with some of the schemes that are coming in now on getting points for doing sustainable things. Well, actually, You could chase the points, but you could be worse off by chasing the points. So it's that balance you have to say, well, am I going to lose sleep over chasing points? Or am I just going to say, well, actually, do you know what? I'm doing a damn good job in the best way I can without doing anything stupid that's going to reduce the profit on my business. Because at the end of the day, without the business, we have nothing.
Mm. But I sort of add a real sort of note of optimism here, because farmers manage soils mostly, and actually soil is amazing in terms of the carbon it can store, and through how farmers farm soils, the ability to store carbon can be accelerated. And if you think that for every 0.1% increase in soil organic matter, that's equivalent to storing 9 tons of carbon per hectare.
Yeah,
that's significant when you think that the acres that you farm, what that would mean if you simply lifted it by 0.1%. That's 9 ton a hectare. I can't do the math in my head, but it's quite a lot. It's about 1,800 tons.
It is a lot, and I suppose that's really what we look at now. Is if we're doing any drilling or any reseeding and any cropping, is how we go about that to improve the soil carbon, really, as much as anything. The organic matter, which comes down to the organic matter.
It does. And soil health.
Soil health and not burning off organic matter, and those are the key things, really, which again is better for your business, isn't it? So it's that it's a win-win again, but it's, you know, because we all know that in a lot of cases we have destroyed a lot of soils, and you probably see it more on arable farms now where they're all asking for livestock farmyard manure again because they realise they've had too many years of using artificial fertiliser and not putting the organic matter back. And so now there's a demand for the organic matter to be put back.
Mm. And actually it's an interesting one, because it's exactly the same as we were saying earlier in terms of managing your farm well, because it's exactly the same with soils. And I guess the biggest challenge for dairy farmers very often is soil compaction. You know, putting heavy machinery over ground when ground conditions aren't fit, and soil compaction does affect soil organic matter and hence the ability of soil to store carbon. And again, that's really back to first principles of managing soil.
Absolutely. And of course, in a year like this, when we've had a very wet spring and trying to go silage making, you just have to shut your eyes and pray that you don't sink out of sight and you've not done too much damage to the soil. But what can you do? That again comes down to your business, doesn't it? You know, you've got to do what's best for your business at the end of the day. And it was get the crops off, and we'll have to work out the soil compaction afterwards.
So to wrap up, I'd like to ask you both a very, very similar question, but focused in slightly different directions. David, as a farmer, what recommendations would you make to somebody who has had carbon footprinting put upon them?
Who've had imposed on them, basically. I would recommend that they embrace it, really, because actually it gives them a real signal as to where their business sits now and where it could sit in the future. And I think that's the important thing for me, is that it has highlighted to me areas that I could make efficiencies and gains. Even if you forget looking at it with a carbon head on, the messages in that report should tell you as a business where you can make changes for the future of your business to help your business as well as helping your carbon footprint.
Thank you. And Liz, what recommendations would you make to a farmer who hasn't yet gone down this journey of carbon footprinting and is just sort of putting their toe in the water?
Well, I guess the recommendation I would make is don't be afraid, jump in and choose your calculator. I'd be delighted if you choose the farm carbon calculator, obviously. But I think the next recommendation is to just sort of, with most calculators, you don't actually have to put all the information in one sitting, because as David said early on, it's really important you do the best job you can to get accurate data in. Probably actually assemble your data first. We offer a data input sheet that you can actually do it separately to doing the inputting, so you can actually get all the data onto the sheet before you start going on the computer at all, which might be actually an easier way in. But then once you've actually got the data in, that's really the start of the journey, because then you've got some information in front of you and you can start looking at it. And I would say, though, that if it's your first time doing it, probably what you need then is somebody to talk to who understands it a bit better than you do, to actually just explain it to you and also start to talk about, actually, so if this is a hot spot, what can we do about it? And it's that relationship, because the minute you start seeing the opportunities, and all those opportunities will probably lead to improved profit, so there's not really a downside. So yeah, the advice is just jump in.
I think, I mean, you can look at it as benchmarking in a way, can't you? It's setting a benchmark. But also, I think, as Liz mentions about the inputting of the data, there are a number of people who can input the data for you, so it doesn't have to be done by yourself. So if you're frightened of actually doing it yourself, there are a number of people who are prepared to come on farm and do it for you, because that's the other thing is, and that actually in some ways helps, because they know what they're looking for on each farm. So if somebody is a data inputter for one of the toolkits, doesn't matter which one, but if they do it regularly, they know which parts of the business they should be looking for that information from. And so that actually helps in the standardisation of the reporting, because you're getting the same information coming from different farms being put into that toolkit.
You're listening to the Food and Farming Podcast. I'm Tom Washbourne from AHDB Dairy. You've just been hearing from dairy farmer David Cotton and Liz Bowles, who's the Chief Executive of Farm Carbon Toolkit, who've highlighted that there are some easy wins which can not only reduce a farm's carbon footprint, but can have a positive effect on its performance and profitability. A carbon audit is a useful management tool to help decision making once you've identified the hot spots and focus areas, and it's something that AHDB take very seriously. That's why I've also been speaking to our lead environmental specialist, David Ball, who began by explaining what we mean by the term net zero.
Net zero is when carbon sequestered and stored equates to the carbon emitted by a particular activity.
And where do you see the challenges for the industry when it comes to carbon footprinting?
Well, so as well as focusing on reducing emissions by adopting carbon efficient practices, is it important to account for carbon sequestered and stored in soils and vegetation and maintain management approaches that optimize carbon capture and storage. It's important also to differentiate between emissions associated with a single enterprise, such as the kilograms of CO2 per litre of milk, and the net carbon position of the farm business. There are challenges associated with the allocation of inputs between enterprises. But in addition, accepted carbon reporting convention means that enterprise reporting excludes the beneficial insetting, which is often a feature of farming activity. For example, carbon sequestered in trees, hedges, biomass, and soils, etc., is essential to help us reach net carbon. But carbon accounting procedures don't include this in footprints for agricultural produce. It's AHDB's aim to influence these established procedures to ensure that farmers are recognised for the positive effects that farming practices have on the environment and carbon capture and storage.
And you mentioned insetting there. Can you just clarify what the difference is between insetting and offsetting?
Well, offsetting, Tom, is a fairly well recognised practice whereby the emissions of a particular activity or business are offset within another business, tree planting, for example. Whereas insetting recognises carbon capture activities within a business to balance the residual emissions associated with that activity. It's important to recognise the difference between offsetting and insetting when looking at a whole farm business. So a farming activity is credited with the good work that's done on the farm to capture and store carbon.
That sounds really important, David. Where can farmers find out more information about carbon footprinting?
There are a number of readily available carbon calculators, and it can be a bit of a minefield. But AHDB has a section on their website with some practical and technical questions that can help differentiate between those calculators and allow you to choose the most appropriate one for your business. So look at AHDB calculators on our website.
Where is carbon footprinting likely to lead dairy farmers in the future?
Well, I think it will allow farmers to identify and adopt management techniques and new technologies that result in carbon efficient and financially efficient practices. And AHDB can provide technical information and evidence to help decision making on farm.
AHDB's lead environmental specialist, David Ball there. So let's recap some of the important details to take away from the discussion that you've just heard in this episode about carbon footprinting. Use the guidance on the AHDB website to help choose a tool to establish a baseline. Look for easy wins to reduce carbon and improve profitability. Sticking with the same calculator, enter your data annually, but look for long-term trends. More efficient use of resources and improved animal health and performance is key to economic and environmental success. I hope that helps, and good luck. I'm Tom Washbourne from AHDB Dairy. Thanks for joining me on the Food and Farming Podcast.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.